Welcome to the Left of Lansing podcast with your host, Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. A, dare we say, entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how we can best make Michigan's political machine work for the people. And now, live from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah, it is on. Finally, woo! You are listening to the Left of Lansing podcast, the pilot episode of Left of Lansing. I'm your host, Pat Johnston. Man, this is something I've been wanting to do for such a long time, and I thought a few months ago, you know what? I want to do a podcast on progressive politics affecting the state of Michigan and Michigan's pop culture scene. And I thought, you know, how hard would that be? Just had to get a microphone, just get a computer. Not that difficult, right? Apparently, yes, it was very, very difficult. And it would not be done if not for the help of a few important people here. First of all, I'd like to thank my wife, Dr. Heather. That's how I will refer to her here on the podcast. She has all kinds of audio technical expertise. And without her expertise, this podcast would have never gotten off the ground. She knew exactly what kinds of equipment that we had to purchase. She knew how to test that equipment. Mostly, though, she had to deal with my legendary short patience. And she did all of that with aplomb. Dr. Heather, thank you very much for all of your help. Special thanks goes out to my good friend Rich for getting the leftoflansing.com website going. Oh, I needed a blog, but I didn't know how to create a blog. Well, my good friend Rich did know how to create that blog. So, Rich, thank you again for all of your hard work. The blog looks fantastic. One more thank you goes out to our friend Kirsten. She was able to provide us with an awesome podcast logo. And you can check out that logo when you, of course, download the podcast or visit the blog at leftoflansing.com. Kirsten, thank you again for all of your hard work. You rock, my friend. Like I said, this is something I've been wanting to do for quite some time because I like talking about Michigan politics. I always have ever since I got my first radio job out in the western side of the state. And that's when, thanks to our news gathering service, that I finally learned what was happening to our state. You have to remember, I was a progressive voice. And it was just after 9/11 in November of 2001 that I started. And I got my first radio show just a couple months after being hired. It was amazing. The listeners were not too keen, though, on hearing a progressive voice at that time. And even though Jennifer Granholm ended 12 years of complete Republican rule in 2002, I learned in my first job how much power the lobbying influence possessed with many of our state legislators. I will never forget when two Republican state legislators would come on my show with a paper titled Talking Points. They were so used to visiting different radio and TV stations that allowed them to spew their talking points. I couldn't believe that. And as a brash 25-year-old, I said, that's not going to happen on my watch. Now, I may not have been good at it, but damn it, I was going to challenge those legislators. And did I make people mad? Woo, yeah, I did. And that was my job. A young progressive voice on the radio during the run-up to the Iraq War. You think I made people mad? You bet I did. And do you know what made listeners mad the most, though, in my opinion? They weren't used to hearing someone from the left on the radio who not only advocated progressive values, but fought back against conservative voices. And that's what I will strive to do here on this podcast. Because as many things have changed in this business, one thing remains the same. Media hate real progressive voices. For example, I watched Michigan's Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer give her first State of the State address the other day, and to me, her speech focused on specific themes that she campaigned on: fixing the damn roads, providing stronger safeguards to protect Michigan's water supply, providing more educational opportunities to help Michigan's job force, and to protect Michigan's Medicaid expansion. I mean, those were things that she campaigned on. Of course she's going to highlight them. I mean, that's what the State of the Union and a State of the State address is all about, giving big policy ideas and then letting the budget proposals spell out how to pay for such ideas. She wasn't going to bore everyone with dollar amounts or specifics, but on Michigan's public TV network after her speech, the old media guard chastised Whitmer for not being specific. Longtime Lansing reporter Tim Skubick scoffed, "Where's the beef?" Then longtime reporter Bill Ballinger jumped on the Where's the Beef bandwagon and criticized Whitmer for not offering real goals. Now, I just ran off four of them for you, and there were more, but for some reason, this round table of experts, so-called, had no idea exactly what they just listened to or what they just watched. But it was longtime WJR announcer Frank Beckman's attendance on the roundtable that really fired me up. Now, Frank Beckman was a great sports reporter. I will never, ever deny that. As for the political scene, Frank is a right-winger and sometimes can be quite nutty with his right-wingism. And so Frank is on the roundtable. I'm like, wait a second, what's Frank Beckman doing on there? So, of course, Tim Skubik goes to Frank Beckman for his expert advice and opinion on what he just heard with the governor's speech. And Beckman chided the governor by saying, "Governor, the campaign's over. What now?" Oh, really, Frank? Are you saying the same thing about your boy Donald Trump, who's still fighting for a wall? I mean, that was one of his campaign promises 2 years ago, and he is still talking about it. What kind of analysis is that? Gretchen Whitmer campaigned on those goals that I talked about. She won because of those goals. She won by a huge margin because of those goals. Of course Whitmer's going to talk about them in her first State of the State address. How stupid! However, while there were two other reporters who gave centrist points of view on this roundtable on public television, I noticed that there was no progressive representation. Now, Skubik didn't mind having a right-winger like Beckman on the panel, but he didn't have a real progressive voice to counter Beckman or some of the others on that panel. But then I had a realization. That's the way it's always been. Progressive voices are usually stifled. You know, it's amazing to think how well Democrats and, even more importantly, progressives did in 2018, despite not having much of a spotlight in traditional media forms here in the state of Michigan. We progressives always have to find new ways to fight and get our messages out. And that's what the Left of Lansing podcast hopes to accomplish. We'll not only cover Michigan politics, but progressive Michigan politics. You see, there's a groundswell of support for progressives and progressive causes, as we saw in 2018. And I will try my best to highlight all of them and to counter the stranglehold that Michigan's Republican Party has had on the state for nearly three decades. But I'm not just going to preach to the choir. I am going to invite conservative voices to join me for a discussion and debate of the ideas from time to time, because I want them to challenge me on my ideas. And in turn, I will challenge them on their ideas. And maybe, just maybe, we'll find some common ground. Or maybe, maybe, just maybe, they'll realize they're wrong and become a progressive. Oh, one could only dream. So thank you for listening to the pilot episode of the Left of Lansing podcast. Take a quick break, and then coming up, Lonnie Scott, executive director of Progress Michigan, joins me.
Thanks for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. Upset with something you've heard? Did Pat say something you think is ignorant, stupid, or arrogant? Or do you actually agree with something Pat said on the podcast? Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com.
Okay, I'd like to welcome Lonnie Scott, Executive Director of Progress Michigan, and also a fellow CMU Chippewa, to the Left of Lansing podcast. Lonnie, thanks a lot for being with us, and hey, fire up chips.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Fire up chips.
Lonnie, before we get started, I know that you've done several interviews with different radio and TV stations and numerous interviews and commentaries with different publications, but let's be honest. Being on the pilot episode of the Left of Lansing podcast has to be one of the highlights of your career.
Absolutely. I'm very honored to be your pilot episode here, and hopefully people will want to listen to you after talking to me. So I'm a little nervous for you, but I think we'll be all right.
I think we'll be A-okay. Hey, what's Progress Michigan all about?
Progress Michigan is a 501c4 nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. We promote progressive ideals and policies and hold elected officials accountable. So we do a lot of accountability to promote progressive values in the state of Michigan.
All right. How did you get involved with it?
It's actually a pretty funny story. I had applied for several jobs at Progress Michigan before I was actually hired to be the executive director. So spanning a couple of years, I had worked in the Michigan legislature for both Representative Alma Wheeler-Smith and then again for Representative Jeff Irwin. And it was around the time of the healthcare fight when Obamacare was first passed. And I left working in the legislature to do more advocacy work. and I started doing communications work for a group called Know Your Care, Protect Your Care, where we were educating folks about what was actually in the bill. Obamacare was one of the only major pieces of legislation that's ever been passed without a PR budget attached to it that would allow congressional offices to actually tell people what was going on in the bill. That was not included for political purposes. And so 501c3 and 501c4 organizations had to take it upon themselves to educate the public about what was actually going on with healthcare. And so that was my first real step into advocacy work, served as a state communications director. And that position was actually under Progress Michigan at the time. And so that was the first time that I worked there. And then when there was a vacancy as the executive director, I applied for and was lucky enough to be selected to fill that position. So lots of advocacy communications in between the two, but thankful to be a part of an organization that I think is, you know, has the best team in politics. I mean, I'm a little biased, but I think I work with a lot of really great folks.
Is this something that you always wanted to do? I mean, when you were in high school or at Central Michigan, did you always want to get into politics?
You know, it's funny. I tell people I'm probably one of the only people you'll ever meet that my major and minor actually match exactly what I'm doing. So I was a major in political science and a minor in interpersonal and public communications. It's something I've always wanted to do. It's something I really enjoy doing. You know, if you had asked me in high school what I'd be doing, I'd have told you I was going to be a veterinarian. but I realized very early on that actually my passion was politics. And so by the time I actually got to Central and started selecting a major, it was politics all the way and communications.
What would you say? What were some of the influences that helped you become a person who wanted to fight for progressive causes?
Well, you know, I think really I owe a lot of that to my first real political boss and mentor, Alma Wheeler Smith. Yeah. You know, I think Alma taught me that you could fight for progressive, you know, a lot of that was considered, especially then, to be a liberal or to, you know, was pretty radical back when I first started in politics. And so, but Alma told me that you could really fight for your values and the things that you believed in, and that, you know, you didn't have to back down or change simply because that's where some other folks thought you should be. And so I learned a lot of really great political lessons. And the other great thing was, you know, Alma was able to work with folks on the other side. They may not have agreed on things or the reasons that they wanted to do things, but she was always able to find a way to get stuff done that helped people. And I think that's, you know, to me, that's the core of public service and why I've always been fascinated with the type of work that I do. I've always had kind of a fundamental belief that if other people were going to be making decisions for me, as is done in government, I'm going to be as involved in that process as possible. And so for me, you know, fighting for progressive values is just something that I've always really been interested in.
I'm talking with Lonnie Scott, Executive Director of Progress Michigan, here on the Left of Lansing podcast. So let's talk about things that are happening right now after a decade of dominance by the Republican Party here in Michigan. Democrats really did make some noise in 2018 with Gretchen Whitmer replacing Rick Snyder as governor, Dana Nessel taking over for Bill Schuette as attorney general, Jocelyn Benson finally winning the Secretary of State seat. Of course, many congressional seats went to the Democrats. Debbie Stabenow got reelected as our United States Senator. It appears to me that not only did Democrats do well last year, but it seems to me that progressivism also won. So, Lonnie, why do you think Michigan, I guess, went pretty progressive? I mean, I always think of Michigan as a light blue state, but in 2018, I'd say it kind of went dark blue.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of factors. I think Michigan has always been relatively progressive. I think, you know, we used to be a leader in things like education, which is certainly a progressive value, public education. You know, there are a lot of things that I think led up to it. One is that, you know, progressive issues were actually winning on the ballot across the country, even as Democratic candidates lost. And that started, you know, before 2010, but I think you saw it there as well. And I think, you know, if you look at some of the progressive issues that have come up, people are supportive because they are really, again, about helping people. And I think you've seen that sea change over the past few years that people are starting to realize that, yes, a living wage is important. And it's clear that our elected officials, especially here in Michigan, where the districts have been so badly gerrymandered, we're never going to get around to doing that. They could always find time to cut taxes for big business, to give, handouts to millionaires and billionaires, but could never find time to make sure that those people who were working hard to make ends meet had a chance. And I think that you saw that swing left in 2018 because people are fed up with the inaction. You know, you said it at the intro to this segment about the fact that we've been under total Republican control for nearly a decade. They've controlled every lever of power, not only the governor and AG and Secretary of State, but also both houses, the House and the Senate, and the Supreme Court. So it's been, really difficult, I think, for working Michiganders under those conditions. And you're starting to see people really stand up and take control of the political process for themselves to make sure that they're electing people and passing policies that are going to benefit everybody and not just the wealthy and well-connected.
And I agree with you that when you look at the Michigan's history, yes, there has been a lot of progressive causes that have won for many, many decades. Do you think that the political landscape, as in terms of demographics, is helping change that? I mean, I saw in West Michigan during the last election that I think Kent County actually voted for Gretchen Whitmer over Bill Schuette. And it seemed like Democrats and progressives were winning in certain areas that they weren't winning before.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And I think that will continue. I think that people are catching on. I think, 2016, I think, was a wake-up call to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And certainly the president's actions since 2016 have helped people who maybe were on the fence or maybe voted for him because they didn't think he would actually win or that he wouldn't actually do the things that he said he would do. But I think people are starting to see that there is, there's really one set of people who are only for big business and the wealthy, and there are others who are fighting to make things even for everybody, and that everyone has a chance at opportunity here in Michigan. And I think you're going to see that all across the state. I also think, yeah, there's been some demographic shifts, there's been population shifts, and I think that Michigan is no longer the state that the Republicans had 10 years ago. Honestly, had it not been for gerrymandering, I don't know that they would still be in control of the House or the Senate. The numbers certainly tell us that they probably wouldn't be.
Right.
So, I think that their days of power are limited, and we're going to see them scrambling to do everything they can to stop it. I mean, I think we saw it nationwide. There's efforts at voter suppression. There's all different types of ways to try and maintain that power. But as long as the voters of Michigan continue to stand up and not let them get away with those things, I think that we'll continue to see more progress in our state than we've had in the last decade, but even before then.
Well, I guess maybe that just goes to this one question, and it's something I didn't want to admit the day after election night 2016. But were Democrats and were progressives kind of complacent going into that election? And maybe it's because of Donald Trump's shocking win that it woke many of us up and said, wait a second, what's going on here? If we don't do something quick, we're going to lose a lot of things that we fought for. Do you think that Trump's election galvanized us to finally wake up?
Yeah, I think it woke a lot of people up. I think there are some of us who have worked in this environment that could see the writing on the wall, that certainly didn't want to admit that Trump could win, but who were quietly saying to other folks, like, we've got a real problem here. I think there were a lot of issues in 2016. I think a lot of the warning signs were ignored, and I think it did wake a lot of people up. I think there was a sense of two things. One is people woke up that were kind of complacent, but also it ignited people who had never been involved before.
Yeah.
And so and it gave them a reason to want to be involved and to want to get to work. I mean, I think, Proposal 2 is a perfect example of that, with gerrymandering reform, of just the sheer grassroots power of people who said, we're sick of this and are going to go out and do something about it. And I think that, that was a mix of people who had been involved and maybe weren't as involved as they should have been in 16, and also people who couldn't have cared less about politics, didn't realize it affected them until it really affected them.
Right.
It's important for us to remember and to put into context, it was only about one vote per polling location in Michigan that Trump actually won. So it was a little over 10,000 votes. You could actually fit all of the people who changed the outcome of history between our states, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. It was less people that determined the outcome of the presidency than attend a Michigan football game on Saturdays. I mean, it was about 78,000 people as opposed to the 110,000 plus that fit in the Big House. You know, I think there was it was a wake-up call to a lot of people, but we have to keep it in perspective that, you know, it doesn't have to be that outcome again. We can still do the work and talk to people, and people understand what's happening now. And I think there's a lot more energy because people have started to see victories in the way that they can organize and win, like with the ballot initiatives that passed this year as well.
Right. We're talking with Lonnie Scott, Executive Director from Progress Michigan, here on the Left of Lansing podcast. Are the millennial and Gen Z generations becoming more of a powerful force in Michigan politics? Have you seen anything that could indicate that that's happening?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and they should be. You know, I think that that's part of the sea change that we're seeing nationwide, is that I aspire to be an old, rich, white dude someday, but the majority of the people in this country are not, yet that's who our leaders are. And I think people have started to realize that the more that we have representation that looks like us, that acts like us, that is more like the population, the better off we are. And I think that's nationwide, not just Michigan. I think you're going to see that. I think you've seen more millennials getting involved. We certainly saw a record number of folks voting, just voter turnout in general, in the 2018 election. That was not just here, that was nationwide. And I think, you know, you're going to continue to see that growth. And I also think that millennials are, you know, technically, I'm right on the edge, but technically I'm a millennial. I think you're going to start seeing those folks as they're taking on leadership positions, really starting to change the conversation. And that goes back to what we started talking about in the beginning. That's why you're starting to see more progressive policy, because the younger folks and the people who have been watching what's been happening are more progressive. They are more likely to support progressive policies. And more they get involved in the political process, first of all, you know, I believe the better, but also it's gonna promote more progressive policies in that way, just because that's where they tend to be on issues.
Lonnie, I know you got to get going. If I could just ask you just a couple more questions.
Sure.
The governor's first State of the State address, how did that make you folks at Progress Michigan feel? What was your overall take on it?
You know, I thought it was great. I thought the governor did an excellent job at reaching out to the folks that she could across the aisle and saying that she would work with them on big issues, while peppering in a lot of progressivism, talking about climate change, her recent executive orders on transparency, or on saying that we're not going to have an immigrant detention center here in Michigan, or yes, private prisons. I mean, I think, you know, she hit on all of the right notes, and it was refreshing after 8 years of being viscerally angry after listening to a State of the State. It was a refreshing change. Again, she offered to work together on issues. I think that's going to be important in divided government. That's going to have to happen. But it was very clear that she was still going to work on progressive causes.
Yeah.
And so that was something that we definitely enjoyed hearing.
All right. I'm a little cynical when it comes to the Republican legislature. So do you think, Lonnie, that they are going to do whatever it takes to make sure that she fails?
I mean, you know, I think they're going to try.
Yeah.
I think they're going to try. The one thing that I know about Gretchen Whitmer, having known her through working in the legislature and other places before she was governor, is that Gretchen gets stuff done. And I think that's what made her such an impressive candidate. I think that's why she won by such a large margin. You know, there are districts where Gretchen won handily that still voted for a Republican in the state legislature. And I actually think that the more and more they try to obstruct her, that it's going to actually backfire on them, because I think she is more popular than most of the folks in the legislature. And I think that they're going to quickly learn that there are now consequences for their actions. I think that they probably got into this habit of running everything, and now it's time to actually govern in a way that really helps people. There's going to be a learning curve there, but I actually think that Gretchen's determined. I've watched her in action. The other thing is, she came from the legislature, so she knows the legislature. And I think that was part of the speech that, if you haven't been around politics a lot, you might have missed. I think there were a lot of hints there that where she was telling a lot of the new lawmakers, I know this process better than you, and we're going to work on this. I believe her. I don't have a lot of faith in the Republicans in the legislature. I think that's probably pretty clear. They haven't given me a reason to believe them on much. And I think that opposing her at every turn is going to be at their own peril. because they're not going to have the safety of gerrymandered districts for very much longer.
Right.
And people are sick and tired of gridlock. And I think more and more are starting to see that that's the Republican Party mantra, and they will reject that.
Well, and I have to agree with you on the point that I think Gretchen Whitmer will try to work with them where she thinks she can. But she's proven that she's a fighter, and she is a fighter for progressive values. And I do like that part about it, because I think in order for her to really come out as the winner in this whole thing, she's going to at least have to – she's not going to win every battle, obviously, because she only has so much control for these first 2 years. But as long as that she shows that she's fighting or wants to fight for those who voted for her and voted for change, I think she'll be okay. Lonnie, one more question here before I let you go. I know you guys at Progress Michigan have something coming up in April.
We do. Progress Michigan hosts what I consider – again, I'm biased. I know I said I had the best team earlier. I'm going to – have all of your listeners really hating me for bragging here, but I think we have one of the best political fundraisers of the year. It's not sitting at a table eating, you know, hockey puck chicken and listening to an elected official speak. We actually do a big comedy show, call it Stand Up for Progress, and this year we'll be in Lansing on April 13th. The headliner is Michelle Wolf. We're very, very excited about Michelle Wolf. For those of you who may not know who she is, was the last comedian invited to the White House Correspondents' Dinner,
where
she roasted the Trump administration so badly that they've stopped having comedians headline that event, and had her own show, was on The Daily Show. It's going to be a lot of fun, and we'll be in Lansing at the Cadillac Room on April 13th at 7:30. Tickets are on sale, and actually, as of the end of last week, we had less than 50 remaining, so tickets have sold very, very quickly.
Very cool. And if people want to learn more about Progress Michigan, where should they go?
They can go to our website, progressmichigan.org.
All right. Lonnie Scott, Executive Director of Progress Michigan. Thanks a lot for being on the Left of Lansing podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. Want to give Pat a piece of your mind? It's easy to reach him. Just send an email to leftoflansing@gmail.com. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information.
Hey, thanks again for listening. I greatly appreciate it. Last call here for this episode of Left of Lansing. Governor Gretchen Whitmer did not mix any signals last week when she canceled plans of a $35 million immigration detention facility in Ionia. The Detroit Free Press reported, Whitmer nixed the sale of the former Deerfield Correction Center to Immigration Centers of America, a private detention center operator based in Virginia, because the company could not guarantee the facility would not be used to detain adults who had been separated from their children or other family members, among other concerns, said Whitmer's spokesperson, Tiffany Brown. It's the latest in a series of moves that Whitmer, a Democrat, has taken to reverse directions taken under the administration of her predecessor, Republican Governor Rick Snyder. Reverend Jack Eggleston, a board member of the group Michigan United and pastor of Unity Lutheran Church in Southgate, said the center would have made it easier for Immigration and Customs Enforcement to separate families. He said, "We applaud Whitmer for standing up for immigration families today and standing against the private prison industry." Okay, now, this was kind of a no-brainer for Whitmer. After all, she said that her administration would work to build bridges, not walls. So this is not a surprise. Plans for the new facility were given the green light, as the Free Press noted, by the Snyder administration. The former Republican governor's chief of staff, Dennis Muchmore, has been working behind the scenes on getting a deal done. Unbelievable, right? No, not really. It's Lansing. This is the same Dennis Muchmore who sent emails complaining about the Snyder administration's slow response to the Flint water crisis, but he didn't do all that much about it and apparently never really kept his boss aware of the crisis. I know. What were the odds? If you believe that story, of course. The revolving door between Lansing and lobbying is alive and well, and one wonders what Muchmore is getting to build this immigration detention facility. Whitmer's decision showed, I think, some real guts because it meant that Ionia would not get an additional 250 jobs from the facility. That's, you know, she knew that going in. I have some affinity with Ionia since I worked there many, many years ago, and the closing of that prison facility did hurt that town. I have no doubt about it. But are these the kinds of new jobs that we want to celebrate here in Michigan? Shouldn't we first and foremost celebrate our values over jobs? I mean, jobs that might not be around forever. Conservative Detroit News editor Nolan Finley says that Michigan should say bravo to President Trump's family separation policy because we could create jobs from it. How grand. Now, look, I've known Mr. Finley ever since I was in high school. He's a nice person, and we've had lots of laughs through the years. In fact, Nolan has appeared as a guest on my different radio shows through the years, and I hope to have him on this podcast in the near future. And knowing Nolan, hey, he'll do it, I think. But I find his arguments regarding this topic somewhat absurd. For example, Finley writes, Whitmer also says that she would not sell state property to build a facility that would separate parents from their children. But Michigan operates a number of detention facilities that keep parents and children apart. They're called prisons. Okay, dude, we've always sent convicted criminals to prisons. Yes, that means those prisoners are separated from their children, people, you know, from America. We're not talking about Americans here. We're talking about asylum seekers. And thanks to Trump's zero tolerance policy, children are being separated. And you know what? They will be affected because of the separation for the rest of their lives. Secondly, Finley argues, and I quote, presumably, Whitmer takes her election as governor last fall as indication that the state's population shares the open border stance of the Democratic Party's progressive wing. But before that, Michigan voters helped elect Republican Donald Trump as president, and he certainly holds a much different stance on the matter. It's fair to say the state's values are not as easy to discern. True, Trump barely beat Hillary Clinton in Michigan in the 2016 presidential race, but a win's a win. I get it. But isn't it also correct to say that Whitmer's victory was not only a rebuke to the longtime Republican rule in Michigan, but also a rebuke on Trump's policies? As The Bridge magazine noted after the 2018 election, Whitmer held all 8 Michigan counties that Democrat Hillary Clinton won in the 2016 presidential election, while picking up 9 counties that backed Republican Donald Trump. All right. As Lonnie Scott from Progress Michigan noted earlier here on the podcast, Whitmer won some counties on the west side of the state as well that used to be Republican strongholds. So, you know, I think it's safe to argue that Michiganders not only voted for someone to fix the damn roads, but to block the Trump administration's hurtful and racist immigration policies. That's why I applaud Attorney General Dana Nessel for joining 15 other states' lawsuits to block Trump's national emergency charade. And that's what it is a charade. Michiganders wanted a check on the Trump regime. Lastly, Finley says that we should always strive for job creation's sake. But at what cost? How would Michiganders feel today if we had agreed to imprison Japanese Americans during World War II? I mean, this is basically the same thing. Look, jobs are fantastic, and we should always find innovative ways to create the jobs of the future. But we must also keep our values ahead of creating temporary jobs. And while Ionia used to be known as a prison town, perhaps there's a way that we can help that city and other cities and towns across this great state create new jobs for the future rather than living in the past. And by the by, asking Whitmer to allow these jobs to go forward, isn't that government creating jobs? I thought that was wrong.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wanderbeats. To hear more, visit wanderbeats.net. That's wanderbeats.net. Now back to Pat Johnston.
That'll do it for the pilot episode of the Left of Lansing podcast. You got through it. Hey, and even more importantly, so did I. Coming up next week, I will talk with Jared Skorupt. He is with the conservative think tank, the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Hope you can join us next week. Remember, you can always email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Oh, and one more note, the leftoflansing.com website isn't exactly completely finished. Don't worry, it will be soon, but you can still go there and check out what we're doing right now. I'm Pat Johnston. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Just kidding, this thing isn't researched. And broadcasted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance provided by the wonderful Dr. Heather. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. And Pat's musical taste, if you can handle it. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.